Today on Movie Wars, we talk about The Fantastic Four and The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It's time for Movie Brothers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Brothers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. I'm hungry.
I'm excited. I was going to talk about how excited I am to watch Straight Out of Compton. Or Outta Compton, okay. Which is our screening.
What's that
got to
do with me being hungry?
Nothing, but I was just thinking I was really
this
excited.
This is how it works in the house, by the way. I make a statement and Rashmi just disregards it.
I didn't disregard it. I acknowledged it, but I just made another one.
I was trying to talk about the fact that we're going to go and grab a nice bite to eat afterwards, but Rashmi stays in her world.
I'm actually most guilty of that. You know,
excited?
I never respond to your cues during our podcasts. I'm in my own world usually.
I don't think any of us do. I think we're all...
I don't listen. I'm going to be listening in today's episode.
In fact, there's three separate audio streams with this recording device I'm using. Maybe I could put them out as three independent podcasts. It'll probably work just as well.
It would.
Okay, Joe, so you are hungry.
Yes.
And we're going to a very nice meal.
Market we are.
In Del Mar.
Yes, we are.
Yes, I've never been.
We don't often do together, no. So it's nice.
Courtesy of a gift voucher that Rashmi has received.
Yes.
So, looking forward to yes. making use of that.
Yes.
So.
Pity it wasn't in the gift that we talked about because it was a gift voucher.
Ta-da.
Oh, yes.
That's a reference to our last episode where yes. we reviewed The Gift, in case you haven't heard it.
Go see The Gift.
And the last episode is also a reference to Dr. Dre.
Straight Out of Compton.
Yes.
Which is what Rashmi's
see, you tied
about
it
watching.
Together.
Go
that's
see the
why
gift.
It works.
Go see The Gift.
We did actually.
I've seen The Gift.
I'm putting subliminal messages.
Go see The Gift.
Go see The
Nobody's
Gift.
Nobody's listening to each other. This is not a show. Let's do it. Why don't we just do a review?
No. No, I know. I got it. No, I got it. I'm anxious to see the. No, I'm not very anxious to see Straight Out of Compton. But I was very pleasantly surprised when I saw Dope. It's on my list of the best movies of the year.
Really?
Dope is, yes.
Yeah, so, Dope was good.
So I don't think this is going to be as playful as that somehow.
Oh, crap.
No, I think this is going to be serious.
Is it going to be like 8 Mile? Maybe.
I think it's going to be more like 8 Mile.
Okay. Yeah. It's
okay.
But I've been listening to NWA on the way to work, and it makes me really angry, so I got to stop listening to that first thing in the morning.
I'm sure your co-workers would agree.
I don't know.
Okay, let's do a review. Let's start with The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay, so I have the intro to this one. In the early 1960s, Agent Napoleon Solo and KGB operative Ilya Kuryakin participate in a...
Sorry. That was such a committed pronunciation of Ilya's last name. Carry on.
Except it sounded Indian, not Russian.
Okay, we will all try saying that word after yes. I've done the intro. Participate in a joint mission against a mysterious criminal organization which is working to proliferate nuclear weapons. So this is directed by Guy Ritchie, who I love. And writing credits, many writing credits. Guy Ritchie, Lionel Wigram. And then story by Jeff Kleeman, David C. Wilson, Guy Ritchie, and then Lionel Wigram as well for the story. And the story is how they've put it here. And Sam Rolfe, I guess, wrote the original TV series Man from U.N.C.L.E. back in the day. So this stars Henry Cavill, Armie Hammer, Alicia Vikander, Elizabeth Debicki, Lucia Calvani, Sylvester Groth, Hugh Grant, Jared Harris, and many, many others. Huge cast of extras because it's a huge action movie. So I've been super excited to watch and talk about this one. So Yazdi, you go first.
So what's going on? How come all the best movies of the summer are coming out so late? I don't understand. This movie should have opened on July 4th weekend. I don't really like the 60s, although I grew up. Anyway, I was born almost in early 70s. There's nothing about the 60s which really resonates for me. I had no clue about the original television show on which it is based. In fact, I came to the screening and I asked, what is an U.N.C.L.E.? You know, U.N.C.L.E. So, you know, I was kind of probably the worst demographic to go see it because, you know, there was nothing about it that resonated for me. But what a fun movie this is. This is a movie which is committed. It's completely 100% committed. It has, it doesn't just have the look and the feel of the 60s. It has the gait of the 60s. It kind of walks the way, you know, a 60s movie walks. This could have been a movie which could have been made in the 60s, the tones. But put all that aside, it's just such a creatively fun movie which has lots of double entendres and, you know, spies and games, and there's a giddiness and fun about it. There's something very James Bondian about it. Love the movie.
Joe. Oh, before you say this, do we think Joe's going to like this,
yes,
or hate this?
Joe's going to love it.
I don't know.
Yes.
I think he's going to be a bit hard on it. Okay, Joe.
No, I'm giddily in love with
this. Oh, good. Okay.
So, remember we reviewed Mission Impossible a couple of weeks ago, and I had a bit of a hard time with how
gushy we were.
Well, not just how gushy you were, but how gushy everyone is, and how I was looking for kind of a little bit of spice. Just something there, there was a missing ingredient. Despite how competently made and enjoyable the film was, there was something missing.
Rubbish.
This movie has that in... Sorry?
I said rubbish.
No. This movie took a shovelful of that magic spice and threw it into the story. It's Guy Ritchie, so if you're familiar with many of his movies in the past, Snatch, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, he has a certain presence behind the camera and the movie gets very playful. He does lots of little visual things, but the movie for me was just so visually operatic, so clever and punchy. This movie had a real punchiness to it. Every single moment was just bright, inventive, creative. The interplay of the characters, the wit behind some of the dialogue, I enjoyed this from start to finish. There was not a moment in this movie where I wasn't having a blast, and I was really, really devastated when the credits played, simply because it was all over and I missed it. And I think you had that with a movie recently, but I totally relate to that. I was like, oh man, I wanted more.
So my observation is we seem to be having a lot of spy movies hitting us recently. I think 'tis the season of The Secret Agent. Anyway, since Kingsman, this is one of the best movies in the genre. Stylish, fun, tongue-in-cheek, all the things you guys have said before. This felt like an old Roger Moore-esque James Bond extravaganza with a humor and action pumped up. I love this. I love Guy Ritchie. He totally works his magic in this movie. Brilliant.
He doesn't always work for me. He's hit or miss. Hit or miss for me, partly because sometimes I don't understand what his characters are saying.
Yeah, I guess it's a lot of British
but here all the stars align. I mean, you know, these are not, none of them are really big name actors, you know, and it's very committed to that 60s feel. I mean, there's this whole subplot about what looks like a little micro disc, which looks like something out of the 60s. And it, within the conventions of that, it's really... For the first time in a long, long time, I really thought, oh, wouldn't it be good if I was transported into the 60s? I've never felt a need to be in the 60s, but this made it feel all the glamour and all the, you know, the hair and the clothing. And but it's just all the stars align for this one. They really do. It just all fits together so nicely.
It was so stylishly done. I mean, I think that's the thing with Ritchie. He tends to stylize and he tends to do these... You know, those kind of little moments where the plot moves along visually. There's not a lot of dialogue, but you can kind of see things from multiple angles and it all starts to come together. There's a beautiful montage, I think, involving this, I think it was a speedboat scene where, you know, the screen divides and, oh, just wonderful stuff.
But what I like about it is, it does not seem like a reimagining or reboot or any of that nonsense.
No.
He uses techniques which were used in the 60s. His music has that twangy 60s score. His you know, the visuals, even this, you know, screen breaking up into little pieces, those were all done in Roger Moore movies and movies from the 60s. So he kind of completely commits to it. You know, he could have done like a slick, you know, 2015 take on it, but it's not. It visually, plays by, I mean, those conventions.
Yeah, there's no CG. This is pure theater. And like for me, one of my favorite moments was at the beginning of the movie where we have this delightful car chase scene. Mm-hmm. It's a cat and mouse scene, but it's so well choreographed and orchestrated that, you know, it's just beautifully inventive. And that's the thing. I mean, Ritchie has a way of telling a story visually that no one else seems to be able to do.
Yeah, I describe it as movement and velocity that just like sucks you in. Just to say a few more words about the production. I mean, I love the costumes. The costumes are fantastic. And each character has such a definite style, which is so unique to that character, which I loved. And then I also liked the grain of the movie. There was a real texture and color that really felt like we were watching an older movie. And I just love that. But what works the best for me, I mean, other than the story and the production and the great music and the costume, the combination of Henry Cavill and Armie Hammer is just delightful to watch. I mean, they're really well matched in terms of stature and there's no, you know, if you drew a Venn diagram, there's little that kind of what, you know, that would cross over. So good.
I want to respond to everything you said. I mean, I think this is what I meant earlier when I said that I wouldn't be surprised if he used 60s film stock. He's filmed it so well that it looks like 60s film stock. And that's what I mean by it doesn't seem like somebody trying to do 60s. It is somebody in the 60s. And that there's a distinction between that. And, you know, about your other point, this is why I think, you know, Mad Max, and I'm sorry to bring it back, Mad Max is such a great film because this movie does what Mad Max did. And I think Mission Impossible did that a little bit as well. Is before every action scene, it lays out the geography of it. There is this there's this whole climax set on an island. And again, in that last scene in the movie, the camera tells you, this is where person A is. This is where person B is in relation to A and B. Now look what A is doing. Now look what B is doing.
It's a really
and
good point.
It sounds stupid even as I'm saying it, but people don't bother to do that. Michael Bay never bothers to do that. So
it doesn't matter in a Michael Bay movie.
Right, yeah, but he swings the camera around.
Right. So, but you're invested in it because you understand this person's coming from here. This person is, you know, 100 meters away from there, and you get more invested once you understand the three-dimensionality of the action scene, and you know, Guy Ritchie does that very well.
And that's the point I'm making about how visual everything is, right. Because it's not depending on lines of dialogue to propel the action forward. Yeah. Everything is just well-constructed. Three-dimensional space, Yazzie, is a perfect way of saying it. You know what's going on at any moment in this movie. Yeah. Even, you know, there's so many moments.
And then about the actors, this is what I wrote in my notes, that forget the cool spies and the chic women. The best chemistry in the film is between the two male leads.
Yeah.
You know, it's remarkable. And for me, I mean, Henry Cavill has never really impressed me.
You didn't watch The Tudors.
No, I haven't watched The Tudors. But I watched Immortals and I watched the god-awful Man of Steel. But for me, right now, he's reached kind of a criticality. I mean, he's almost impossibly dashing in this. I mean, I was horrified. He does not have a bad profile. I mean, it's very annoying. Everywhere the camera looks at him, he looks really good. You know, so he seemed to me like a perfect kind of, you know, James Bondian dashing, you know, a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and then Armie Hammer, you know, we've seen him many, many times. You know, Hollywood has been trying to make him happen for a while. I'm hoping maybe this one will. I can't wait for a sequel.
He's actually a surprising pick for this character. I would never
me
have cast
too.
Him here.
Yeah.
And he nailed it. I mean, his comedic timing, he's got some really difficult things to deal with facially, visually, non-verbally.
And a Russian accent, which
and
is very
an
authentic.
On top of it, which I bought. I mean, you know, Alicia Vikander here.
Gorgeous.
Alicia Vikander, yeah. After Ex Machina, can you even believe that's the same actor? Yeah.
She is absolutely beautiful to look at. And what a great actress and such girl power.
Yeah.
I love it. What a great character.
She's going to be this year's
I wanted
it girl.
To be her. Like, she's the type of character I look at in a movie and I'm like, I wish I could be her. She's so cool.
Not as good as Rebecca Ferguson in Mission Impossible, but up there, yeah.
Yeah, very close. I would give you that.
Yeah.
Hmm, interesting. But, now all of that aside, all of that great stuff we've talked about, what a great story.
Mm-hmm.
What a great story with such good twists and turns. Again, you don't know who's good, you don't know who's bad, you don't know who to trust.
And for me, I didn't know how it was going to resolve.
No, I didn't
There's
either.
There's a point in the movie where I'm like, uh-oh, this can only end badly. And I can't think. I'm wrecking my brain. Like, how are they going to resolve this issue? I couldn't think of it.
Yeah.
I was like, it's done. There's going to have to be something pulled out of the bag here.
Yeah.
Actually, I never felt that way in Mission Impossible.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And you've made me think of something, which is I didn't care how it was going to end because I was so present in the moment. Like, I think it's one of the movies this summer where I'm so present that I'm not even thinking about how it's going to end or what's going to happen. I'm just enjoying every scene for how much it's giving you. Okay, anything else on this one or should we wrap it up? Okay, let's start with Joe.
Marvelously fun. I haven't really got anything else to say other than go see this movie as soon as it opens. Go see it. Go tell your friends about it. This is wonderful stuff. It's inventive. It's punchy. It's bright. It's clever. It's everything that I want to see in a... And in this type of film. So it's an easy 9 out of 10 for me. I can't wait to see it again. I absolutely can't. And, I can only think that it's going to be even more fun second time around. There's so much in it.
Yes, Steve.
Before I sum up, there's one other thing I wanted to mention is that people talk in this movie with a very particular rhythm. It almost feels like a Howard Hawks movie, like an old black and white movie, especially Henry Cavill speaks very differently than how we speak right now. The rhythms of the words are very different, and that's intentional again.
You spoke to the authenticity of the 1960s. The dialogue was a key part of that. I mean, this is how movies were made then. This is how people spoke. And absolutely.
It feels like a lost James Bond movies from the late 60s, and that's a great compliment. You know, it has a nice, cool, hip air. It's groovy. I can't really recommend this movie enough. And I think the greatest compliment I can give this movie is that the one film that it kept coming in my mind while I was watching it that it reminded me of was The Talented Mr. Ripley. And, you know, that's one of,
My favorites.
One of my favorite movies of all time. Mm. Like, it would be in my top 20 or if not top 10. And this movie reminded me a lot, not in terms of the moral play or any of this, of the darkness of The Talented Mr. Ripley, but in terms of the visuals and in terms of its sense of fun and authenticity and so forth. Great time at the movies. Even if you know nothing about this particular world like I did, go see it. I'm shocked that this movie's coming out so late in summer. 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to 8.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. 8 out of 10. A stingy 8 out of 10.
It's a
what
very
fun.
Stingy. Woo.
So this is one of the most fun and joyful movies of the summer, along with Rogue Nation. I think it's actually better than Rogue Nation.
Yay.
Rush out and see this, and I can't wait for the sequel. I actually felt like I felt after watching The Grand Budapest Hotel, for how joyful that made me feel and how happy and grateful for movie I felt after we walked out of that one. Ugh, I almost want to give this the 10,
do
but
it.
I'm going to...
Don't give it a 10.
Do it. If you do it, I'll do it.
No!
Easy 10. 9 out of 10.
Okay. 9, 9, 8, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's not a 10. It's just...
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Let's move on then to the Fantastic Four.
Okay.
This is you again, Rashmi, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
All I'm going to say is 4 young outsiders teleport to an alternate and dangerous universe which alters their physical form in shocking ways. The 4 of them must learn to harness their new abilities and work together to save Earth from a former friend turned enemy. So this is directed by Josh Trank, and it's written by Simon Kinberg, Jeremy Slater, Josh Trank, Stan Lee, and Jake Kirby. Jack Kirby are given credit for the characters. So this stars Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, Kate Mara, Jamie Bell, Tony Cabell, and Tim Blake Nelson, amongst many others. So Yazdi, why don't you start with this one?
So I know Marvel's trying to take over the world, and you know they're making sure that we keep watching movies from the Marvel universe, you know, into the next 100 years, it seems. But to that effect, this seems like their third attempt to kind of resuscitate or reboot or whatever this Fantastic Four thing. You know, there was a movie they originally did within the decade, Fantastic Four, which had Chris Evans and Jessica Alba and so forth. The actors this time around are a little bit better in terms of what they individually do. But I think what is fatal about this movie, and it is fatal, it dies even before it starts to breathe, is the zero chemistry between the 4 leads. It's horrible. It's like, who put these four people together? Did they even ask them to spend half a day together having a cup of coffee? It's bad. This movie's bad.
And yes, you just saw Shaun the Sheep. Joe.
Yeah, I loved it. No, I'm kidding. this movie starts...
You are hungry.
It starts very promising.
No, this movie starts dull for me and then just goes nowhere. I mean, it was interesting. I was speaking to one of the other San Diego film critics just after the movie, and I think he nailed it. And this movie is missing an act, right? Mm-hmm. It kind of, you know, has this origin story and then there's the final battle, but nothing seemed to happen in the middle. And everything, my biggest issue with this movie was just how clumsily the dialogue and everything was constructed. It was flat. I mean, there's just to quote a line from the movie, you know, the four of them are sitting together and they're like, we need a name. You know, I mean,
that was so bad.
It was so bad. Cringe-worthy.
That was cringing. I'm like, please. You know, I felt bad for all the actors.
Yeah. I did. I mean, these are people who have like good. These are solid actors. Yeah. I mean, you know, Kate Mara and Miles Teller. We've enjoyed all their performances.
Michael B. Jordan,
Jamie Bell. Yeah.
And they're just handed some clunky dialogue and some really ham-fisted storytelling that they have to deal with here. So yeah, this movie was just flat.
Yep, unanimous thrashing. What a load of pants. I mean, really, this was such a joyless, pointless, it's dull joyless, movie. Yeah. And I only got excited in the last 5 minutes, not because it was about to end, but because I wanted to see the Fantastic Four, not an origin movie, for the entire length of the movie. And especially not a bad one when we had already, like you said, Yazdi, seen one in the last decade. I mean, all the way through, I just kept thinking how clunky it all was. Even though it's based on a comic book, even in that universe, it all seems so far-fetched and ridiculous. What? Honestly, this is the opposite of The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
It is the opposite of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Unlike most people, I actually did not have a problem with the entirety of the movie being an origin story. It's almost like when they all come together and call themselves Fantastic Four, the movie ends. That's literally where the movie ends. So I have no problem with the movie, entirety of the movie being an origin story. And this particular director, Josh Trank, his only other big movie was Chronicle, which, you know, I don't know if you guys saw it.
That reviewed very well.
And I've seen it, and it had no-name actors, and it was really about these teenagers coming to terms very, mm-hmm. very, very slowly with the fact that they have superpowers. And that movie was really interested in the dynamics of the friendships and these people. And it really, once they got the superpowers, that movie got boring. But it was really very interested in what would you do, the realistic kind of take on it. And so the movie tries to be that, I think, in the first half hour, the first half of it. And I did enjoy the first half of it. But it almost seemed purposeless and joyless after they do get their superpowers and generic. So, oh God, what a missed opportunity. Hollywood should give this director a chance to do something better.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just poorly written. And I remember watching The Fantastic Four on TV as a cartoon as a kid.
I'm not
familiar with the comic book, but, you know, they were great action-adventure stories.
And this
movie commits the cardinal crime of a comic book movie by having, you know, no action or adventure. There's this weird extra dimensional stuff that they try to do, but I never felt that it was really creating any real tangible danger for the rest of the world. And there are these moments they invent this machine that transports you to this other dimension. There could have been some real excitement in that, but they bungled the whole thing. The way that they become the Fantastic Four, again, entirely bungled. It was, you know, these are moments that should have had, you know, tension and drama, and instead it's just like, you know, oh look, you know, now my arm stretches. I mean, it was so disappointingly flat.
And the CGI was terrible. I hated the CGI so much in this one.
I mean, it wasn't awful, but it was just completely
clunky.
Unremarkable.
Just
completely unremarkable.
Nothing new.
Just barely serviceable.
Yeah.
Now, there's something weird about this is that it didn't come from Marvel Studios. So this is a Marvel book, but it was not put together by Marvel Studios.
Even though Stan Lee is part of the project.
Well, Stan Lee was a producer in it, but it wasn't, you know.
It comes with the Marvel thing at the start, right?
No, I don't think
it did. Yeah, it came with the comic spin.
I think this is made by Fox Studios, not by Marvel. So I think there's...
So it's Marvel anyway. Endorsed, but it's not made by Marvel. Well, no. I think that's the issue, right?
I'm trying to say maybe there's been some issue with this movie getting made. There's some licensing things. Marvel doesn't have the rights to have it back yet, so we expect another reboot. And boy, does it need another reboot, because this was a stall.
Yeah.
Failed start. In fact, I'm just going to score it now.
Yeah, four. I was going to say, I don't even want to talk about this anymore. Go ahead, Joe.
Four out of 10. Yeah,
it's just a misjudgment.
That's not a fantastic four.
No, it's not. It's a misjudgment at every level. The tone, these actors, their chemistry, the wrong director. This director is more interested in human things than the hormonal superhero stuff. So it just is a bad mistake. 3 out of 10. Sorry.
Why do a reboot if you can't do it much better? Don't waste your time with this one. I hope they don't make a sequel. I'm actually halving the Fantastic Four and giving it a 2.
Oh,
a very bad 2.
That's brutal.
Oh, awful. Awful. I just couldn't wait for this to be done. And I love Kate Mara and I love Miles Teller.
I don't know. I don't like James Mike Teller. What is his name?
Miles Teller.
Miles Teller.
Yeah, he's got an arrogance about him. Yeah.
I'm getting tired of his shtick. I want him to do something else, but... Anyway.
All right. Well, let's wrap up. Mail at movieallers.com, twitter.com/movieallers, facebook.com/movieallers as well. Tell us what you think of these movies. We'd love to hear about them. So until our next episode, too many movies, too little time. Hey, good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.